From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, international teams step up their search for the Air Asia wreckage. Former New York Governor Mario Cuomo dies at the age of 82.
There was no one like him. He was peerless at the podium.
And in Africa, myths and superstitions about childbirth put mother and baby at risk. It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. Search and rescue crews from at least four nations are now involved in the search for the Air Asia flight that crashed into the Java Sea Sunday. Crews are now using sonar equipment to locate the fuselage and vital black box flight recorders. Ron Corbin reports for VOA from Bangkok that officials report 16 bodies have been recovered.
Search teams and vessels from Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Japan, and the United States are helping to intensify the search Friday for the wreckage of Air Asia Flight 8501 that crashed in heavy weather Sunday. Technical teams using metal detectors are scanning the Java Sea at a time when there has been some easing of the challenging weather conditions of recent days. The experts include those from the French company BEA, the manufacturer of the Airbus A300 that went down with 162 passengers and crew on board halfway through a routine flight from the Indonesian city of Surabaya to Singapore. BEA said in a statement hydrophones would be used in a bid to locate the acoustic beacons of the flight recorders, which have a signal range up to 3,000 metres. On Friday, at least six bodies were located by helicopters from the USS Sampson, a Navy destroyer involved in the search effort. Indonesian media reported Friday how the bodies were being transported back to Surabaya for formal identification after initially being taken to Panggalabun and in Kalimantan, the town nearest to the site of the crash. Hugh Ritchie, a chief executive of the Sydney-based Aviation Consultants International, says search teams hope the aircraft is still largely in one piece after crashing into the sea.
Still leads to the common belief that it broke up on impact rather than in the air. And that's why we've got bodies in such close proximity.
More than 145 people are still missing from the flight, with families in Surabaya preparing for the task of formal identification. On Thursday, the body of the first victim formally identified, a woman from Surabaya, was returned to her family. Late in the day, her coffin was buried as 150 people looked on in drizzling rain. Officials says the weather outlook remains a challenge for search teams, with rain and strong winds and waves up to 4 metres predicted through to Sunday, while strong sea currents keep debris moving. Analysts say once the flight recorders are recovered from the Air Asia 8501 flight, analysis of the data is expected to lead to an interim report within weeks as to the cause of the accident. But a final, more detailed report may take a year. The Air Asia tragedy follows the loss of Malaysian Airlines flight MH370 in March with 239 passengers and crew on board. Search efforts in remote waters off Australia's west coast are still underway. In July, Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 was shot down over eastern Ukraine while carrying 298 passengers and crew. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
Despite dire predictions about Russia's economy for 2015, many Russians welcomed the new year with cheers and hopes for a better future. With the sinking value of the ruble, some people say they crave stability more than they do prosperity. But the troubles, including political tensions with the West, seem to have spurred a surge of national pride, something Russian President Vladimir Putin sought to boost with his New Year's message. Zlata Sahok reports that hopes for a better future also seem especially high among Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine.
The fireworks in Moscow's Red Square on New Year's Eve were greeted with much enthusiasm, recalling better times in Russia.
We wish the most positive, all the best for Russia. It will win. Russia is always the best, the most powerful. Russia rules. Hooray. Go Russia.
But sinking oil prices combined with Western sanctions against Russia could lead to an economic recession in the country this year. The value of the Russian ruble has declined by about one half against Western currencies, bewildering ordinary Russians.
I looked at the exchange rate every day. It was simply interesting for me to watch this exchange rate that was growing and falling and then growing, but it had no effect on me. When you have nothing, you can't lose anything either.
Even President Putin warned Russians of the possible difficulties ahead.
In the coming year, we will together have to solve many problems, and the year will turn out the way we ourselves decide to make it. The results will be as effective, creative, as each of us endeavor to make them. There are simply no other recipes.
But while he vowed that Russia will soon overcome its problems, Mr. Putin's opponents are predicting a dark future.
The end is near. The country is at the brink of going down. I have these kinds of feelings. That's why I'm saying that people will take to the streets demanding a change to the situation, and we will contribute to this. That's why I think that 2015 is a very important year. I would say it may be a historic year.
Russian financial officials say that with some effort, an economic disaster can be avoided.
Any improvement, even a very small local one, in general policy is able to strengthen the markets. For example, European sanctions need to be voted upon to be extended. And maybe, if Russia doesn't give cause for a strengthening of sanctions, we can get a positive result in that case.
The most recent polls show that President Putin still enjoys strong popular support, between 70% and 80%. That support is especially high among Russian speakers in Crimea, a Ukrainian territory annexed by Russia last March. And despite shortages of water and electricity, they have suffered ever since.
We came today to the square to celebrate the New Year together with the town, with the people, and to see President Putin. They have promised they will switch off the lights in the apartment, but we really wanted to see the president. So that's why we came.
The annexation of Crimea and Moscow's support for Russian separatists in the rest of eastern Ukraine have earned Western condemnation and contributed to Russia's economic woes. Some Russians are looking at it philosophically.
We have got used to being more optimistic despite everything.
Or with humor, as this singer asking Santa Claus to send Russians a new and unused president packed in a gift box with a return label in case he is not satisfactory. Zlatica Ho, VOA News, Washington.
Here in the United States, former three-term New York Governor Mario Cuomo, the father of current Governor Andrew Cuomo, has died. As VOA's David Byrd reports, Cuomo died Thursday of heart failure at age 82.
A liberal Democrat, Mario Cuomo was scheduled to take part in his son's second inauguration Thursday, but was not able to attend due to health concerns. He later died of heart failure at his home. Senator Charles Schumer of New York said Mario Cuomo lived what he believed.
He did it because he believed in New York, and he believed in America, and he believed in the power of individuals to achieve. And that's what motivated him his whole life.
Former New York Governor David Paterson called Mario Cuomo one of a kind.
There was no one like him. He was peerless at the podium. At the same time, he was such a strong believer in whatever it was that he was advancing that he would mix it up with people when he felt that he had to.
Cuomo loomed large in New York politics as governor from 1983 through 1994. He became nationally celebrated for his ability to weave the story of his humble upbringing with ringing calls for social justice. He never sought the presidential nomination, in spite of twice being considered amongst the Democratic Party's frontrunners. President Obama called the Cuomo family to express his condolences. He said in a statement that Mario Cuomo was a determined champion of progressive values and an unflinching voice for tolerance, inclusiveness, fairness, dignity, and opportunity. Andrew Cuomo was New York's Attorney General before being elected governor. His other son, Chris, is a newscaster for the cable news network. His daughter, Maria, married designer Kenneth Cole. Mario Cuomo died at age 82 from heart failure. In Washington, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
The new entirely Republican-led U.S. Congress will weigh in on global hotspots and America's response to them when lawmakers return to Washington next week. As VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman reports, conflicts from Ukraine to the Middle East are on legislators' minds, as are high-profile international initiatives undertaken by President Barack Obama.
International negotiations on Iran's nuclear program resume 1 week after Congress gavels in. Skeptics like Republican Senator Bob Corker say lawmakers will consider tougher sanctions on Tehran in case negotiations fail.
There will be a desire very quickly after the first of the year for Congress to weigh in on the topic in some form or fashion. Congress will want to weigh in quickly on the Iran deal.
Congressional wariness over Iran's nuclear ambitions is not new. What no one anticipated just weeks ago is that Congress would wrestle with President Obama's surprise diplomatic opening with Cuba.
Today, the United States of America is changing its relationship with the people of Cuba.
Ending the U.S. embargo of Cuba would require an act of Congress, something Democratic Senator Ben Cardin supports.
There will be a need for Congress to take action, hopefully, as we move to a new chapter in our Cuban relations. And it's going to be an interesting debate in Congress.
This Congress is not going to lift the embargo.
Republican Senator Marco Rubio is ready for that debate.
The White House has conceded everything and gained little. They gained no commitment on the part of the Cuban regime to freedom of press or freedom of speech or elections.
Republicans want to be seen as offering constructive criticism, according to political scientist William Howell.
On the one hand, they want to underscore failings of the Obama administration, and on the other hand, they need to be able to, they need to be seen as a responsible, mature party that can lead the nation.
Majority status in both houses of Congress will give Republicans a louder megaphone to critique the president's handling of crises from Ukraine to the Islamic State insurgency in Iraq and Syria.
I think our country acting like such a paper tiger to the world on this and so many other fronts is doing incredible long-term damage to our nation.
Mr. Obama also is not immune to dissent from his own Democratic Party, according to political analyst Stuart Rothenberg.
The president could have as many or more problems on the left with Democrats on international issues, national security issues, as he could have with Republicans, because there are lots of Democrats who are more concerned about U.S. recommitting military troops.
Whatever Congress's concerns, the president appears determined to leave a stamp on America's outreach to the world. In a recent interview, he said, quote, "I believe in diplomacy. I believe in dialogue. I believe in engagement." Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Population growth projections indicate that more than 5 billion people will be living on the African continent by the end of this century. Well, despite this, infant mortality on the continent remains the highest in the world. The World Health Organization says the probability of an African child dying before the age of 5 is five times greater than in Europe. Reasons include endemic poverty, lack of medical care, and conflict. But as Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg, many pregnant women and their unborn children are at risk due to persistent myths and superstitions.
A storm sweeps over Soshanguve, a township about 32 kilometers north of Pretoria. Pitch black clouds pour more misery over the poor residents, their homes already flooded after days of constant cloudbursts. Inside her rusty shack, 36-year-old Cynthia Mohape breastfeeds her 3-month-old son, Jeremiah. Like many South African mothers, several superstitions guided her pregnancy.
I kept the pregnancy secret as long as I could. I only visited the doctor when only I was 7 months pregnant.
Mohape believes that revealing a pregnancy early could be extremely dangerous.
If your enemies find out you are pregnant, they will pay a witch to bewitch you. If that happens, then I'll lose my baby or I will die myself.
Dr. Ashley Mtunzi says Mohape's fortunate she and her baby are healthy. He's an expert in maternal health at Wits University's Reproductive Health and HIV Institute in Johannesburg. Dr. Mtunzi says many of his patients only consult him shortly before they're due to give birth, out of real but misguided fear.
She would say to me, no, I will be jinxed. Somehow my baby will be born dead or I will have a stillborn. The outcomes will not be good.
Mtunzi says this can have terrible consequences for mother and child, which often could have been prevented earlier in the pregnancy.
If you cannot pick it up early in pregnancy, because you have not accessed antenatal care, it would mean that it has dire consequences for the passenger, the baby. The baby can lose sight. They can be born with congenital syphilis.
He adds that late medical intervention for expecting mothers also fuels South Africa's HIV pandemic.
You would actually have transmission of HIV, in particular, transmission of HIV to the unborn baby, because the mother is really not controlled on ARVs or was not on ARVs when they presented themselves in antenatal care or in antenatal clinics.
ARVs, or antiretroviral drugs, can drastically reduce the chances of an HIV-infected pregnant woman transmitting the virus to her baby. Mtunzi is also concerned about another myth he says is spreading fast in South Africa.
And the myth is that when you are pregnant, you need to sleep with a different man than your husband. The reason is that you need to make the baby there to be strong. That is really a myth. That is absolutely ridiculous.
He laments that many HIV-infected women visit traditional healers for herbal concoctions, some of which he labels poisonous.
You see a patient is not getting better, but you are giving them ARVs because they are taking this imbiza or this traditional medicine that is not coordinated in terms of toxicity. So that would actually even render your ARVs subtherapeutic.
Mtunzi wants the state, the medical profession, and traditional healers to cooperate to prevent the spread of harmful superstitions. But at this stage, he says, there's no sign of this happening.
Now we're not taking necessary drastic steps to bring on board these traditional healers at a scale in which actually will be acceptable in curbing maternal mortality in South Africa.
South Africa ranks 51 out of 224 countries for the highest infant mortality rate. Back in Cynthia Mohape's hut in Soshanguve, the rain and thunder endure. The mother entertains her baby with a toy dog. Mohape says she plans to become pregnant again as soon as possible. She smiles and says she wants a girl. Again, Mohape maintains she'll keep the pregnancy secret until the last moment.
I must follow my culture. I must listen to what the traditional healer says about my baby. If I don't do this, the ancestor spirits will be angry with me.
And so the lives of Mohape and her unborn child will again be at risk, like so many others across South Africa, where superstitions about childbirth persist. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Well, this reminder that you can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. Thanks very much for joining us today for International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
This is Today in History. On January 2, 1492, the last Moorish king surrendered control of the remnants of the last Muslim stronghold of Granada in the southern Iberian Peninsula to the armies of Spanish King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. The ensuing Treaty of Granada was an effort at religious toleration, but it was short-lived. The Spanish Inquisition, originally aimed at Jews, was extended to Muslims with the demand they convert to Christianity or face expulsion. On this day in 1727, one of Britain's most famous generals, James Wolfe, was born. In two battles in 1758 and 1759, Wolfe would help drive the French from most of North America. He was shot and killed at the age of 32 on the battlefield near Quebec as he reportedly heard the cries of his men describing the French retreat. In 1882, American industrialist John D. Rockefeller joined the Standard Oil Company of Ohio with his other assets to form the huge Standard Oil Trust, a firm that for a time held a virtual monopoly over the U.S. oil industry. In 1911, however, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the trust was illegal, forcing it to disintegrate into several different companies that, under new names, continued to dominate the oil industry. In 1905, a crucial turning point of the Russo-Japanese War occurred on this day when Japanese forces captured Port Arthur, a major Russian naval base located on Chinese territory. Russia's defeat in the conflict made Japan a major regional power and fueled a movement in Russia opposing the reign of Tsar Nicholas II. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Paul Simon Water for the World Act of 2014, enacted in mid-December by the U.S. Congress, aims to strengthen implementation of the Paul Simon Water for the Poor Act of 2005 by improving the capacity of the U.S. government to implement, monitor, and evaluate programs to provide first-time or improved access to safe drinking water, sanitation, and hygiene to the world's poorest on an equitable and sustainable basis, according to the law's preamble. The 2005 law made access to safe water and sanitation for developing countries a specific policy objective of the U.S. Foreign Assistance Program. The act was named after the late Senator Paul Simon, who authored a book entitled Tapped Out that warned of the world's looming clean water crisis. We need to make every dollar of our limited foreign aid resources count by addressing problems where we can have a real impact on people's lives, said Senator Bob Corker, member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a sponsor of the 2014 law. The law's aims are to ensure water, sanitation, and hygiene, or WASH funding, remains a U.S. foreign policy priority, sharpen the criteria for selecting high-priority countries and communities for receiving WASH service, increase integration of WASH programs with other critical interventions, including child survival, global health, food security and nutrition, and gender equality to increase program effectiveness, advance best practices for effective aid, including public-private partnerships, and improve the United States' strategic approach to safe water, sanitation, and hygiene within the context of broader efforts to promote sound water resources management. Rajiv Shah, the administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, hailed the law's passage as a boon to U.S. and international efforts to provide clean water and sanitation services to 2.5 billion people who do not have access to basic sanitation and 750 million people who lack access to clean water. The Act, Administrator Shah noted, provides a solid platform for USAID to work toward our goal of a water-secure future, free from diseases caused from inadequate access to clean water and sanitation, where food is available and affordable, and where populations are less vulnerable to the risks of a changing planet.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.